Would you describe us as a kind people? I'm not sure that we would define our culture or society really as kind, although it may be that at times that acts of kindness are something that are shown to you or not. But just drive down I-45 at about 5 p.m. and you'll probably change your mind about that. To say that we are a kind people probably would be an exaggeration. But there are kind and considerate and tender people that we come in contact with on a regular basis. Kindness is a quality. Kindness is a characteristic that describe people, and it should describe us. And so you have, like in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, you have this list of all these characteristics describing love, and one of them is love is kind. And the type of kindness that is talked about there is this type of kindness I want to focus in on, and it is a variety of things, as we've seen throughout the weekend. And kindness, we sometimes associate with it as something that is exceedingly positive, and sometimes we give a negative connotation to kindness. And there are some examples of things that are kind, like in Luke chapter 6 and verse 35, where it says, but love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. Your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for He Himself is kind to ungrateful and evil men. Kindness, and the love that is kindness here, is God showing forgiveness. And we would certainly all agree that's very kind of God to offer us an opportunity for reconciliation. And it is unkind on the opposite end of that if we are not willing to forgive. If God found it in His heart to forgive you and me, surely we can be kind enough to others to forgive others who petition, no matter what they have done to us. If you turn to Acts chapter 28, there's a good example of kindness that is shown there. And what's interesting to me, at least, of this example is this example of kindness is not even among people who were Christians at the time. And in Acts 28 and verse 2, Paul and his company were shipwrecked on the island of Malta. And the text says in verse 2 that the natives showed us extraordinary kindness. For because of the rain that had set in and because of the cold, they kindled a fire and received us all. There's nothing complex about that, I'm sure, because of the weather and the situation. They would have sat around the fire and warmed themselves, but that the kindness that they just showed to a fellow person was that was, hey, come and join us. And they helped to take care of them and show some hospitality in that way. And so love is kind, positively, if you will, in that regard, but it also sometimes we give it a negative connotation because we say that love sometimes or kindness is one that rebukes. And to say that love is kind, and yet when love gives a rebuke to others, that's not kind. And we're wrong about that. So we may say that telling something nice to someone or doing something nice to someone is kind, but it may be just as equally kind to someone to tell them actually what they need to hear. Don't automatically think of a rebuke as something that is unkind, because it may actually be the most kind and loving thing that can be done. People who want the best for us and want us to be the best that we can be and to improve, that care enough about us to tell us those things, are some of the kindest people. When you take your child, your grandchild, to the end of the street and you show them the roadkill out there and you say, I don't want this to be you, so don't run out in the middle of the street. That's a kind thing to do, though we may not think of it. When your child is misbehaving and you maybe discipline them, some may tell you that's unkind and unloving, but it is the most kind and loving thing that you can do for them, to help them to be guided and molded into the adults that they should be. Christians might rebuke other Christians, and love will do that at times. Because of love and because of a desire to be kind to others. The idea of kindness is not one that's really earned. It's something that people show. And sometimes they show it for no other reason than they simply care about us. And that's similar to the kindness that's shown in Romans chapter 5, when we see that the kindness of God is that He would actually offer unto us salvation, that Christ would die for us. The ungodly, that we didn't deserve it, nothing about it. I have not lived such a good life that I can look to God and say, well, I'm so good that I'm the reason that you sent Jesus to die as sacrifice. We're sinners. We don't deserve what God has given to us, but He loves us. And that's His kindness that shows through, like in John chapter 3 and in verse 16. Or the parable that we were reading in Bible class this morning in Luke chapter 10, which the Good Samaritan comes along and he doesn't inquire of the man and see, are you of my country people? Are you the same race as me? Are you someone that can repay me for the kindness that I'm going to give? He doesn't ask any of that. He simply sees a person, a neighbor in need, as Jesus uses the example, and acts on that and performs some kindness to him. A man who was in a desperately weakened situation. So I want to talk to you about kindness this morning. And you may be thinking, I don't know how he got the title for this lesson, but it's our text. If you'll turn over to 2 Samuel chapter 9. 2 Samuel chapter 9. And I took a few editorial liberties to make it fit a little bit for me, but you're going to see the idea here in 2 Samuel chapter 9. An example in the Old Testament from David showing kindness. And so, here's the opportunity. 2 Samuel chapter 9, put a marker there, because we'll come back and forth from there throughout the lesson this morning. Okay, verse 1, it says, David said, is there yet anyone left in the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake? Now, there was a servant of the house of Saul whose name was Ziba, and they called him to David. And the king said to him, are you Ziba? And he said, I'm your servant. And the king said, is there not yet anyone of the house of Saul to whom I may show the kindness of God? And Ziba said to the king, there is still a son of Jonathan who's crippled in both feet. And so the king said to him, where is he? And he said to the king, behold, he is in the house of Maker, the son of Amiel in Lodibar. And so he starts with this, is there anyone left at all in the house of Saul that I can show some kindness to? In verse 1 and again in verse 3, he calls it the kindness of God. And in that, in the beginning of this account, we see what I believe is the first lesson that we can take in application from this. And that is, if we're seeking to be kind to others, as should be the expectation, you're going to have to look for opportunities to do that. I put all my points up at once. Don't even worry about the rest of the sermon. Here it is. I'm on the first one. Me and PowerPoint. So, David seeks and looks for this opportunity. Notice he says it in verse 1. Is there anyone left? Anyone at all? And that may seem like a strange statement to us, but you are familiar with this situation that has occurred. And so he says, in what ways can I show kindness? In what ways can I do this good work? Have you ever asked what you can do to show kindness to others? You know, sometimes it is in a congregation that what happens is we don't really do anything. We don't really do anything in help to others. And in that, we say this, nobody ever did anything for me. And so because no one ever did anything for me, I don't go out and do anything for anybody else. But have you looked at it in the way that David looks at it here in this text? Is there anyone left? He's looking for the opportunity to go and to offer some kindness. Have you ever asked what you can do? Now, I know how it works for us. We come in and we say, how are you doing? And everyone says, fine. You may say some variety of that. You give a synonym. And sometimes when there are needs in our lives, someone will ask us, do you need anything? And we're dishonest and we say no. Now, I know we can figure it out. We can be strong enough to get through difficult situations, all those sort of things. But do we offer kindness to others? And when someone offers kindness to us, do we allow them to show that kindness that's there? And so sometimes we have to change the type of questions that we say. And instead of telling someone, if you need anything, give me a call, change that. Because I will tell you, if you tell me, if you need anything, give me a call, I'll never need anything. And I'll never give you a call. Instead, look and ask sincerely, what can I help you with? There's something that I can do, whether it be large or whether it can be small. It's a lesson that we've worked on very diligently back at home. There's a young man that's in the hospital right now. As far as I know, he's still in the hospital in Abilene. He was traveling from Arkansas to California. And he was doing this about 2 weeks ago. He and his wife is a new Christian, and they were headed to Arkansas to be with family. And as they were going there, their reason for going there was because their son was born October 1st of this year and died October 18th. And they were going to mourn with the family, with his family there in Arkansas. Outside of Abilene two Sunday nights ago, they ran off the road. They were in the mud and it was raining. We don't get a lot of rain and it gets pretty bad out there when it does. Hard to see. And he was stuck in the road, and he called for roadside assistance. They said it'd be 3 hours before they could get there. And he decided, he's a young man of 23, I'll get the car out of the road. And so he began working on it. He couldn't get it out, but he got pretty muddy, so he said, I'll get a change of clothes from the trunk of the car. And that's when another car ran off the road and pinned him between the two. So at 23, this young man has buried his son. And that night, both of his legs were amputated. And when we went to visit him, I asked him last week, I said, how you doing? And he lied and he said he was fine. What kindness can you possibly show to someone in a situation like this? I can't tell him I know how you feel. The difficulty that you're going through. I can offer a prayer with you. And so finally, I learned a lesson from someone. And someone that I was there with looked, and instead of saying, let me know what I can do, he said, tell me what to do. I said, can you wash some clothes for us? In their situation, the only kindness they need, all they needed was a clean set of pants to wear. We think of kindness as showing something that is just this magnificent, great, big thing because we want to elevate ourselves, maybe, or maybe even not, but we think that kindness has to be something grandioso, and it can be something as little as washing someone's clothes for them. When David asked here, is there anyone that I can show kindness to? I'm not sure that his intent initially is to do as much as he's going to do. But for us, just the little things can make the difference. There are a lot of things that you can be busy with the other people who are here, that are brothers and sisters in Christ, that you can ask, can I help you with this busy work? No one has to know about it. It's not about tooting your own horn. It's about helping one another and showing kindness. Someone who's generous, someone who is kind like David was, plans. Have you made plans for how you're going to show kindness to others? How you're going to show generosity to others? Notice this request. David's remembering a vow, I believe, and that's going to be in 1 Samuel chapter 18. David's friendship with Jonathan, Saul's son. In 1 Samuel chapter 18, of all the friendships we see in the Scripture, the friendship of David and Jonathan stands out to me as just this bright spot. A wonderful example of two people that are just knit tightly together in friendship. And in 1 Samuel chapter 18 and verse 3, Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. This brotherly love that they have for one another. They make a pact, they make an agreement. In chapter 20, and in verse 14, he says, if I'm still alive, will you now show me the loving kindness of the Lord that I may not die? Some of the details of the agreement here continue on in 15. You shall not cut off your loving kindness from my house forever, not even when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth. So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, may the Lord require it at the hand of David's enemies. Verse 17, he says, Jonathan made David vow again because of his love for him, because he loved him as he loved his own life. In verse 42, Jonathan said to David, go in safety inasmuch as we have sworn to each other in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord will be between me and you and between my descendants and your descendants forever. Rose and departed while Jonathan went into the city. Their friendship calls them to agree and swore that they would be regardless of what happens, regardless of the difficulties, that they would take care of one another. And so Jonathan said to David, I want to show you kindness, not just while I'm living, but I want you to show kindness to my seed after me. And so when we get to 2 Samuel chapter 9, he remembers this that he had with Jonathan's house. Let me show him kindness for Jonathan's sake in chapter 9, on verse 1. This covenant is coming to mind. David asks, is there anyone left so that I can show him kindness? Saul was king of Israel. Saul was Jonathan's dad. And he was the first anointed king of Israel. David was the second anointed king of Israel. You've got this little kind of asterisk between the two of Ishbosheth, who is not anointed king. But you have this fight that occurs and where he tries to take the throne. But David's the second king of Israel. And the royal family would have been a large family with several sons. Saul's family would have had several sons and grandsons. And so now it's diminished all the way down to this point that David has to ask, is there anybody left? Is there anybody there? Saul was lost from the lineage because of the sins that he had committed against God. And it cost him his kingdom. And it gets so bad that David has to say, is there anyone left? Saul was the greatest enemy of David. He was constantly seeking to hurt David, not just to hurt him, but to kill him. You see that in chapter 18 of 1 Samuel in verses 10 through 12. David flees and Saul hunts him. And on two separate occasions, David had the opportunity to kill Saul, threatened his life. Saul's trying to kill him. You could have stopped it all, but he says, no, this is the Lord's anointing. And he does not go through with it. He shows kindness to Saul way back then. He's showing kindness again here to his seed. Do we hold a grudge? Far as I know, to the best of my knowledge, no one's been trying to hunt me down and kill me. Far as I know. But if they were, would I show kindness? Would I say to them, let me see if I can find a grandson of yours to show some kindness to? Or would we hold a grudge? Would we seek to avenge ourselves and actively show revenge towards Saul's family? Or instead, as he does, love? In this way, I believe David is showing us some characteristics we need to learn. He may make some mistakes. I get that. And he paid for those mistakes. But this is a beautiful example of the attitude that we ought to have. Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 44, to, you know, everybody else says, hate your enemies. He says, I tell you, love your enemies. Isn't that what David is doing? If you wear the name of Christ, your attitude and your response towards those that do you wrong is not to strike out in vengeance and not to seek for their payback in kind. It's to love and to bless. And it's that maybe one of the most difficult things that we have to do, because the world around us tells us if someone wrongs you, you get even with them. You get back with them. He did this to me. I'm not going to let him live it down until I can get back at him. And then we'll be even, Stephen, and everything will be settled. It's the attitude that honest Christians will say they have to deal with. You go to the workplace, someone does you wrong. I'm going to get back at them. You go to school, someone mistreats you, I'm going to get back at them. They cheat you, I'll cheat them back. They lie about you, you lie about them. They do things that are evil, and I will do evil right back to them. Direct contrary to what God wants from us. Instead, show kindness and show love. Notice what happened. This kind request was to show kindness to Jonathan's household and his seed, the house of Saul. And David showed it in his reception. Look at verse 5. So we've identified this descendant in Lodabar. In verse 5, it says, King David sent and brought him from the house of Maker and the son of Ammiel from Lodabar. Mephibosheth, or that's how I'm going to pronounce it this morning. So Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David, fell on his face, prostrated himself, and David said, Mephibosheth, and he said, here is your servant. And he said to him, do not fear, for I will surely show kindness to you for the sake of your father Jonathan, and will restore to you all the land that your grandfather Saul, and you shall eat at my table regularly. Again, he prostrated himself and said, what is your servant that you should regard a dead dog like me? The reception that David showed for Mephibosheth is certainly kind. He's the son of Jonathan. He's the son of Saul. And David's just trying to show some kindness to Jonathan's descendants. He's the grandson. This is the grandson of your enemy. Look back to chapter 4. Look back to chapter 4. You see a little bit about this young man and his difficulties in life. So his father Jonathan dies in battle. His grandfather Saul dies about the same time. And this young man is 5 years old. And you look back in chapter 4 and in verse 4, it said, Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son crippled in his feet. He was 5 years old when the report of Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled. Now, why would she need to take him up and flee? We've got a change of dynasty going on. That's a historical tradition, and we're fearful for our life. And it happened that in her hurry to flee, he fell and became lame. His name was Mephibosheth. So here's this guy, 5 years old. His father dies in battle. His grandfather has died. And in this accident, he becomes lame in his legs. It's a pretty severe tragedy for a five-year-old. But not only that, you're crippled in your legs. You've lost your father. You've lost your grandfather. And as you continue reading throughout these texts and what happens, all of your family, it starts to change. Things begin to change. And in this change, like in chapter 3 before this, it says there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. David grew steadily stronger, but the house of Saul grew weaker continually. It is a situation in which all of your family is changing. And this guy, this Mephibosheth, is royal heritage. His grandfather was the king. His father was Jonathan, and now he's living in Lodabar. Y'all might be great with Bible geography, so this may be a bad point to make. But if I put a map up, and you probably could find me Jerusalem pretty easy, and you could probably find me the Jordan River, but could you tell me which area Lodabar's in? It's a no-name place. It's not where the king would live. It's not of prestige. So here, this is where it's all led towards. In a labor-intensive society, he loses his family. He's looked upon with contempt, most likely, in his condition. I think he needs a little kindness. And so some kindness is shown to him. David, in the kindness in his heart, makes the request when he receives Mephibosheth. Look in chapter 9 and verse 7 again. He says, do not fear. Why don't you need to fear, Mephibosheth? You see, when you have a change in dynasty, when you have a change in king and a change in family, you've got to be real careful about that by worldly standards. David doesn't do this. He doesn't seek to kill Saul when he has opportunity. He's different. But amongst all the others that were ruling at the time and all the other kings in the area, if the king is killed off and you have someone else that's going to ascend to the throne and overtake that family, you've got to be real careful to kill off all the sons. You've got to get rid of all of them because of the fear of one of them that might rise up and come back and avenge his father or his grandfather's death and take back the throne which he would view would be rightfully his. And I can only imagine that I pray I'm not reading too much into the text. The fear that should have been in Mephibosheth to hear that the king wants to see you. He may be all that's left. Is there anyone left of Jonathan's house? Do not fear, for I will show you kindness to you for the sake of your father Jonathan. Do not fear. I'm going to show you kindness. And he shows kindness in two ways. He shows kindness in this. He restores the land of Saul, your grandfather. I'm going out on a limb here, and I feel real confident on this one. That's a big piece of land. It was the king's portion. You can eat bread at my table continually. Hey, you're going to dine with royalty. You're going to eat the best of the best. You'll feast at my table, he says. It's pretty kind of David to offer this to him. And Mephibosheth responds in humility. He says in verse 8, "What's your servant that you should regard a dead dog like me?" It's interesting the way dogs are talked about in the Bible, and that's for another lesson. Maybe, I don't know if Steve's preached on it before, but it's interesting to show that most of the time, and here's one of them that I'm familiar with, this figure is used in a negative connotation. He's looking down upon himself. Who am I to be worthy of this? Who am I? Just a dead old dog on the side of the road. Oftentimes is the case when we show kindness to others, we sure to get a response that's different than this. And it's unfortunate, but it happens that we show kindness and the response is that all? And it may be because of what we were talking about yesterday morning, that we have this focus on self and we don't have humility. And we think sometimes that things are owed to us, or the government needs to take care of me, or the church needs to take care of me. But this isn't that. This is the right attitude that says, in helping others, I'm going to help others, and I'm going to respond with thankfulness when I received their kindness. The attitude of Mephibosheth is just as much a lesson for us as the attitude of David. He recognizes and says, why would you care about me? That's what he means when he says a dead dog is me. He shows an attitude of humility and an attitude of thankfulness. And out of those two go hand in hand. A person who is humble and a person who is thankful. Kindness was shown in the provisions. David had already declared his plans for providing for Mephibosheth, and that's exactly what he does in verse 9. The king called Saul's servant Ziba and said to him, "All that belonged to Saul and to all his house I've given to your master's grandson. You and your sons and your servants shall cultivate the land for him. You shall bring in the produce so that your master's grandson may have food. Nevertheless, Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, shall eat at my table regularly." Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. And Ziba said to the king, "According to all that my lord the king commands his servants, so your servant will do." And so Mephibosheth ate at David's table as one of the king's sons. Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah, and all who lived in the house of Ziba were servants to Mephibosheth. And so Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem. He ate at the king's table regularly. He was lame in both feet. David follows up with his offer of kindness. It's the lesson for us to look for opportunities to give kindness and to offer those, not because we're trying to seek something in return. And when we have the opportunity to do it, we follow through with it. He calls Ziba as a witness. And essentially this, if I understand, this is kind of like the land's being deeded over to Mephibosheth. This is his land. And you're going to take care of him. But he, Saul's son, grandson, Jonathan's son, Mephibosheth, he's going to eat at my table. And that's a lesson for us too. When we say we're going to do something, we need to be doing it. David was a man of his word. It's easy for us to tell someone, "I love you." That's easy. But to actually back it up with action, to show that love and to show that kindness, sometimes can be difficult. And yet, when it comes to loving, David was that kind of person. Kindness is something that's expected of us. In 2 Peter chapter 1, we notice a couple of things of character, if you will, and things of service that we should have as Christians. He says in verse 5, "For this reason also apply in all diligence in your faith, supply moral excellence, knowledge, your knowledge, self-control, your self-control, perseverance, your perseverance, godliness, your godliness, brotherly kindness, love." For if these qualities are yours and are increasing, they render you neither useless nor unfruitful in the true knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. These qualities like kindness, a little bit different lesson than about greed. A quality of showing love to someone and kindness in such a way is something that we continue to get better and better at as time goes on. And in 1 John chapter 3, and then the lesson will be yours, in verse 17, just an example of kindness for us and a reminder to us this morning. He says in 1 John 3:17, whoever has the world's goods, sees his brother in need, and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? Little children, let us not love with word or with tongue, but in deed and in truth. Sure, you better love in word and in tongue, but you better follow it through in deed and in truth. Let us show the love of God in our lives by being kind to others, by offering kindness to others, helping as we have opportunity, and loving one another as God would have us to do. Let us show the love of God in our lives by partaking of His kindness as well. We do that by doing what He wants us to do. Our faith in Him that leads us to want to serve Him. Our faith in the facts that Jesus is the Christ, and our desire to be reconciled to Him and to be His disciple. If we can help you in that this morning, whether you need to put on Christ in baptism, we would love to help you with that. If we can answer, we can offer prayers on your behalf. If there's something that we can do in a public manner, just let us know as we stand together and as we sing.